Gary, you're on.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and this is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Today, we are going to be exploring two topics that are not being covered by the mainstream media and most of the major alternative outlets, and that is, what is having the most impact upon our lives? Also, what is the right and left and their media getting wrong and failing to deal with? Joining me during this hour will be our scholar in residence and executive producer, Richard Gale. Nice to have you with us today, Richard.
Hi, Gary. Pleasure to be on with you.
Richard, when I look at where we're at today, I see some extraordinarily dangerous precedents playing out. I see the American public confused about what to believe in, who to believe, what is in their best interest. At the same time, I see politician after politician from all stripes lining up to declare that they're for the people. Vote for them and your interests will be served. But the public are not so gullible this time around, especially the younger generation, the millennials. Why? Because they've seen what has happened to their parents. They see hardworking individuals who were supportive of the Democrats and the liberal community policies for their entire life being betrayed by NAFTA and GATT and CAFTA and the World Trade Organization and wars in Afghanistan, in Iraq, and the destruction of societies that did not represent a threat at all to us. In fact, in Libya, it was actually preventing terrorists in North Africa. And yet, these are the individuals who have access to the internet, to the worldwide webs, and can dive into information. Unlike previous generations that did not have such easy access, unless you were a historian or a sociologist or conversant with the topics of the day, more often than not, you simply believed those ideologues who told you what the truth was. Now we look back and see that almost all of them betrayed us. They manipulated us. The Gulf of Tonkin resolution. There was no attack against the Maddox in the Gulf of Tonkin, which led to the Vietnam War and the destruction of about 3.5 million lives, 58,000 of those being Americans, and a deadly legacy left. And where about the people telling us that all vaccines are safe and effective when we know the science shows otherwise? That is not an anti-vaccine position. I'd be more than supportive of any vaccine that was shown to meet the gold standards of safety and efficacy. We just don't have those yet. And look at all the people told, buy a home, sign a liar's loan. Say that you make $100,000 a year when you make $30,000. Here are credit cards. Don't worry about the 18% basic fee going up to 100% if you fail to make all your payments or are delayed. We will we'll keep giving you money or access to debt. Everywhere we look today, we have been lied to. So our program now is going to be taking a look at these lies and deceptions and, most importantly, what we can do to correct them. Now, we know that the government is not going to change its policies. It is way too far deep into the rabbit hole of conflict of interest. And we know the media that is controlled by the oligarchs and special interest groups are not going to suddenly become objective and fair-minded. We also know that the pundits, those people who come forth to state their views of why we must be prepared to fight Russia and China and start the next war in Iran and support Israel, no matter what its record on human rights. These are the people hear every day and see every day. They betrayed us, all of them, left and right. So let us begin our discussion with what both the left and the right and their reflective media regimes have done wrong and some of the things we should be protesting. The forum is yours.
Yes. You did mention, in pointing that in your introduction, you did mention it with the left. And I would just want to make one statement concerning the right. The right being is that over the years, the Republican Party has become so identified with the Christian right. And this is, I think, one reason why when we mention about the younger generation and the millennials and now the post-millennials wanting nothing to do with it, is because of this exodus that's taking place right now of the younger generation from the big mega churches, who have always supported the right has become so the political right has become so identified with the Christian right that this is why I think the numbers of voters in the younger generations is just rapidly declining. Of course, they are getting the veterans. The veterans would be coming in, and those that are just been so indoctrinated into the imperial model of imperialism that has been a little bit more forthcoming and more pronounced with the Republican Party rather than with the Democrats. But I think when we're looking at the media is just a voice piece for both parties, the duopoly that we have that shuns out any third party from having a voice and an equal table with the Democrats and Republicans. So I think both the left and the right media are failing, and mostly in the same areas. I mean, we're not getting a true analysis of employment figures, the quality of the jobs that are there in the supposed employment boom that Trump is claiming. We don't get the real unemployment figures. I think it's clear that because the media is always going to cover up the fact that America is in a deep crisis, and whatever they can do to kind of just keep us amused, keep us entertained, just spoon feed us what we need to hear, just so that we don't dissent. Both the left and right media, that's what they're pretty much doing, unless it is the right media turning its members against the left, or the left media turning its members against the right, just to keep this kind of charade, this theater of political warfare between two parties, two contingents, to keep going. So that would be one. We're not getting the truth from neither left or right on that. We're not hearing any of the real threats I mean, since the removal of the Glass-Steagall Act, there's been no analysis, really deep analysis, from either the right or left media on the consequences of that. And even to make an association with our recession that we had in 2008-2009 with the removal of the Glass-Steagall Act and the Future Commodities Trading Act, and including the founding of the World Trade Organization under Bill Clinton. So these associations are not being made. And in the independent news and what we report, the recession, it goes right back to the Clinton White House. It's at their feet, but we don't hear that association being made. I mean, look at what all the news that we receive from the independent media and from really good journalists and people that are like Max Blumenthal and Finkelstein and others that go to Medea Benjamin, who go and report from Israel and Gaza, and we're not getting any realistic analysis of what's really happening there through our mainstream media. As long as Israel is given preferential treatment by both parties, that's the message that the public needs to hear from the media.
I've got some additional questions. Because the media and higher echelons of both parties are primarily run by baby boomers. Now, how is this related to the dystopian atmosphere in U.S. politics? And then this is the generation founded upon personal individualism, meaning get out of my way, I'm going to succeed. The highest number of professional careerists in American history occurred between 1963 to about 1990. And today we have over 17 million professional careerists. Now, these are not dumb people. They've graduated from top schools. They've been very diligent in their scholarship. But all the while, what was left out of their equation was how do their actions impact anyone else? And there seems to be this cognitive disconnect, because the more successful these people became, the more effort they put into growing their career, then everything was about more and bigger. Now their children, the X generation, and their X generation's children, the millennials, they're growing, and their mantra is faster and now. So they're not taking the time to look deeply enough at any issue. There is just absolutely no deep level scholarship, at least not that I can see. And so when you have a conversation with someone today, especially a younger person, there are some exceptions, you only hear about what is relevant to social media communication, mm-hmm. but there's no sense of history, civics, social responsibility, philosophy. For example, I'll bet you, Richard, if you went to Yale, Columbia, Stanford, and Harvard, and went on campus, and you stopped 1,000 students and said, could you tell me something about the life and the legacy of Cecil Beaton? They would say, who? Well, one of the most important, prolific, creative geniuses of the 20th century. They wouldn't know who you're talking about, nor the significance of the movements that he participated in and help force. If you ask them the same thing about the great thinkers like Albert Camus, they wouldn't know. Go back further, the reformists in different movements, they wouldn't know. So what we're dealing with is we're dealing with people who want some instantaneous gratification. They want it now. They want it free or cheap. But don't ask them to be responsible for contributing something meaningful that lessens the sufferings of others less fortunate than in this society. So when you look at the younger generation and you look at their parents, I don't see 1 millimeter of difference between the Me Too of the baby boomers and the Everything Me of the millennials. And yet these are the people now taking their place in government, in education, in media, who are supposed to allow us to get out of this mess. Your thoughts?
I think it's ironic. You know, in traditional societies, there's always been this kind of an ethic and a value to aging, that somehow as we age, we're supposed to become wiser. Younger generations will look to the older generations in traditional societies for guidance and for the wisdom, because in this case the boomers, we've had our bumps and our scratches, and we've gotten ourselves up, and we've had our successes and our failures. And there's supposed to be kind of an experience that's supposed to enrich us in our lives, and that we learn our lessons. And yet here is we're called the boomers because right now the elders is the largest population in American history, and constantly of age. It's the largest age group in the history of the world, really, for that matter. And yet, we should have this collective wisdom from the experiences of aging, and yet we're completely void of wisdom. We have a lot of knowledge, but knowledge is not wisdom. I mean, we have very bright people in standing in Washington, but none of them are wise. You wouldn't go to them for any kind of real deep insights into anything. So I just kind of I find it very ironic, with respect to the younger generation, they observe this. They see this. There are a couple other major differences I see, and one is because of their being raised in social media. When you're dealing with people across distance, just on an iPhone or iPad or a computer, you're at a horizontal level with that person. There's no hierarchy. There's no vertical one-upmanship. You're equal. You know, you saw this like in Occupy Wall Street when there was not allowed to be any single voice to speak higher and louder than all the others. You know, but you and I and the older generation, we were raised in a very vertical, hierarchical manner. We respected our teachers. We assume, you know, if we took a course in college, and whatever the teacher assigned to us in reading, we didn't say that we didn't want to read this, you know, or then go to the administration, to the dean, to say, well, I'm not paying all this money because I don't want to have to read this stuff that's being assigned to them. And they're doing this, and they're doing this in the Ivy Leagues. You know, there is a real rejection to this kind of top-down or a hierarchical model that I the members of the millennials have told me that to come and visit here. So this is kind of a debate that we've had, and it's very different than all the institutions that those of us in the boomer generation were just nurtured on this. You know, somehow we are not. The boomers have not been able to take on that responsibility for our aging process and for our experiences to be guides, really guides to the younger generation. We've failed dismally in that, I think. Okay. And I think they do seek guidance from us, but not unnecessarily on our terms. Because I don't think they can relate to us on our terms. Our terms are very vertical. They see each other horizontally, and we struggle to be able to get down at that level to be able to speak with them. I mean, that's my assessment. That's what I've kind of witnessed between us. And that's because of the social media. When you're engaging with people and you're communicating with them from across distance, but it's very impersonal. You know, you're at an equal level with them.
I want to have you share your opinions about the right media and then the left media, because on the right media, we're dealing with seeing how they handle rising homelessness. They say the economy is fine and booming. If you're homeless, it's your fault. Work harder. They say that truth about environmental threats of fossil fuels and coal and hydrofracking and pipelines and pollution of the ocean and rivers and the ground and the air, that it's not true. That if anything, our salvation comes from the very companies that are polluting. They deny that the Koch brothers have their agenda, which is anti-humanistic and anti-planetary and anti-life. They do not want the legalization of marijuana or drugs. They want to keep the war on drugs. In fact, trying to terrify people, and that if you'd use marijuana, it's a gateway drug, and they never look at alcohol or prescription drugs. They are against the LGBT movement or mock it. They do not believe that there's real climate change, and as a result, they have to deny Anthropocene changes. They look at the realistic view of Bush's legacy and Reagan's trickle-down economics as if it actually benefited the working class. It did not. It gutted the working class. They do not support public education. They support privatization. When you ask them about the truth of racial and sexual orientation issues, their head explodes. They do not see an issue with inequality. In fact, they believe inequality merely shows that those who deserve to control more capital are the wiser ones in receiving it. You never see any of these talking heads like Sean Hannity's going into poor neighborhoods and asking his base, which is large, to come in there and help to change the neighborhood, rebuild buildings, develop community centers, have drug rehab centers, gang rehab centers, homeless shelters that are actually humane for families and individuals. You'll never see that happen. And both in the right and the left, there is no true analysis of unemployment or quality of jobs or real unemployment, which is 26%, that you will never hear an honest analysis on the left or right about artificial intelligence, transhumanism, and the far-extending consequences of using artificial intelligence to militarize everything that they can, you'll never hear them, the right or the left, saying, let's have a demonstration in front of the National Security Agency for illegally spying on all of us. Never happened. You never see them, the right in particular, protesting when there's a Republican in power, nor the left protesting when there's a liberal Democrat in power. You will never see them going in front of the New York Times to call out those individual reporters who are steeped in bias. Not all. Some are very decent reporters who report honestly. You will see the right defend people like Alex Jones when he is completely taken off all social media. The left cheers that, and both are wrong. The left is not looking deep enough that when you find someone so contemptible of the truth, with his multiple exaggerations, the Pizzagate scandal and the false flag of 9/11, and all the other things he has proclaimed which are out and out wrong, but now everyone takes him off the air simultaneously. And hence the left rejoices, like the Wicked Witch of Austin is gone. What then will prevent the next person, let's say a Chris Hedges or an Abby Martin, being purged by the right? You see, once you open the door to purge one person, it's open to purge anyone else that disagrees or doesn't align with you. And no one's talking about that. They're merely and looking at his absurdities. That would be like taking a very greedy, incompetent doctor calling himself holistic and then saying, you did some really bad, stupid, wrong things. We're taking away your license. Oh, and by the way, we're going to take away every so-called holistic doctor and nurse's license because you're all the same. You say, no, we're not. But when you have this collective groupthink, you don't discern reason. You abrogate deeper considerations. That's the left and the right. And neither the left or right has been against nuclear power. The Clintons, in fact, the head of Obama's White House staff.
Ron Emanuel,
with Clinton and Obama, these people were all supported by the nuclear power industry. Mm-hmm. And they were all pro-Israel. And they did not stand up and say, we're not giving Israel another dollar as long as you have the largest apartheid prison state in the world. And they all supported Saudi Arabia. And they all supported the invasion of Libya, left and right, and the destruction and regime change in Syria. All of them. And the media supported them. No mentioning of threats from speculative trading on people's lives. No one wanted to reduce the gambling of derivatives. No one wanted to give students an option to get out of debt and to actually pay for their debt to help them have a start in life. They could have. Obama could have, by executive order, put a moratorium on all whole form foreclosures. He didn't. The very people said, I'm going to vote for you because we're the same color, and therefore you're going to be more sensitive to our issues, our needs, our plight, our history, our suffering, than someone other than that. And he betrayed him. So look at Yemen. Look at the Islamic State terrorist organizations like al-Nusra, al-Qaeda, the White Helmets, that the United States and the CIA arms and supplies. Look at our electoral system. Now, I'm just giving you some of the things that both the left and the right have done against their own constituents and all citizens of the world. But I'm not quite finished yet. You will never hear them criticize the central banks and Wall Street, and especially the utterly corrupt Federal Trade Commission, the central bank, the Fed. There is absolutely no sense of irony in the historical review of our worst laws and where they led us, like the repeal of the Glass-Steagall Act and the Patriot Act and the National Defense Authorization Act and crimes against humanity in recent wars and conflicts and the debt peonage and debt prisons being reintroduced when they were banned back in and outlawed back in 1833, I believe it was. And now people can go to jail because they're poor. And when was the last time the government actually thought about building humane shelters for homeless people? They don't. And where were their criticisms, the Clintons, the Obamas, the Bushes, for the private prison industrial complex? And where was their criticism of the risks to our health of GMOs and vaccines and pesticides in the American diet? Not a word. And what about military overreach, oversized our meddling in 81 other people's nations, and the truth about Honduras and the Clinton CIA coups and the coup in the Ukraine and the attempts in Venezuela and Nicaragua and Syria now, and failing to support more regulation of Wall Street and congressional oversight of the Federal Reserve? And what about a realistic view of Russia and Putin? Do you really think that a person who has raised the standard of living under extremely challenging conditions would want to see a nuclear conflict and have all of his legacy destroyed? You may not like him, and he may be as much of a kleptocrat as any other power person, but he's not nihilistic, and he has a far deeper understanding of how to survive, and our sanctions against him have actually worked to his advantage, because when you stop shipping foods to him, he started to grow his own. And now, what before could have crippled him will not. And look at the expansion of the militarization of local enforcement of police, and a hard historical and current look at whether or not the United States is officially a fascist nation. Because by every measure, what represents a cult is either administration in power. If you look at the top 10 reasons that a cult exists, both the Republican and the Democratic Party represent a cult. And also extremely disconnected from the needs of nature. They support geoengineering, artificial intelligence, robotics, and genetic technologies that will cause millions of Americans to lose their job with nothing to replace it with. The consequences of species of extinction. When was the last time anyone, I don't care if it's president, vice president, the other idiots in Washington and the low-life degenerate scum, when was the last time any of them, including Bernie Sanders, say, let us take an honest, careful look at the 200 species that are going extinct every 24 hours, what we're doing to contribute to that, and what we can do to slow it down or stop it? Not a word out of that whole fetid, pure septic system called Washington and New York below Union Square or Wall Street. Not a word about Citizens United. It's off the radar. New class wars. Transnational class of 1% elites against the world. The real cost of drone strikes. Now, that's the right media and the left media, but there are a few more. Then you can take your time and answer this. What about the investigative review of both Clinton and Obama legacies and their consequences? What about a militar expansion under Obama? A man who gets the Nobel Peace Prize at the same time that he's droning people, that he's arresting all the whistleblowers, and he's supporting the illegal activities of a national security state and assassination teams around the world for special ops. And what about challenging trade laws and the consequences of the Clinton presidency? And what about the support for the Poor People's Movement that they gave lip service to and did not a damn thing to? And why isn't Chris Hedges and Henry Giroux and Noam Chomsky ever on the mainstream left media? And don't mention that somehow Democracy Now! Counts in this conversation. It doesn't. Not when you privatize the most important asset of the people and the People's Radio Network, Progressive, Pacifica. And why is there no mention of the impact of pharmaceuticals and foods upon our health? So those are some of the issues that neither the left nor the right are taking issue with changing, as if these didn't matter. The form is yours. Now add to that, please.
One of the things of denial is I was listening to you going through the list of these different things. There is another denial that seems to come out from this list because it's not mentioned. It's a denialism of the fact that there's real suffering in this country. That's not a message that the party, either party, and their voice, their mouthpieces in the media want heard, to really to the extent of that suffering. And we're just listening to a talk by Cornel West at Brown University, and he said that a condition of truth is to allow suffering to have a voice, to allow suffering to speak. And those are the voices. There's something about in our culture, in our country today, of those voices that have a certain truth. Their truth is, and their lives are the consequence of all these things that we're listing here. And that is the voice that's not being heard. You know, this is, and all the great reformers, whether it was, you know, from Huey Newton to, you know, Malcolm X to Mahatma Gandhi to Nelson Mandela and Martin Luther King and Thomas Merton, all these people, Paul Robeson, they heard that voice of suffering, and therefore their voices had a particular truth to them. And I think the media is in such denial of that suffering in this country, and the despair. I mean, what was it, just a recent report, over 50% or something, 50% of Americans are, you know, at the almost at that poverty level right now, 50%. I mean, they have jobs, and they're able to get by from day to day, but, you know, that's despair. You know, in terms of what the American dream is, that's real despair. If you have to just get by day to day or week to week, and you have nothing else at the end of that period of time. So, I think this is prosperity denialism, and that maybe perhaps the media and our government and all our politicians they've all drank the Kool-Aid of this gospel of the self, the gospel of prosperity. Whether it's being Jesus is going to give it to you, or our empire is going to give it to you, and whether it's the fossil fuel industry or Trump or anyone else is going to give it to you, it's a denialism of the real existential despair and the existential angst that is being felt, I think, across this nation. I mean, that's the image that comes to my mind out of that. And I think it's perhaps kind of a very dangerous image, it's a message that's being given. I mean, somehow we can, when we talk about, when you're doing your broadcast, and when you share about different stories of families being bombed in Yemen, or you know, different plights that peoples around the world are facing, there's a human story to that. And we can, and if we have any compassion in ourselves, we can relate, we can feel. I mean, I think anybody who's a real true activist and is trying to make the change, you do that because somehow we can share that despair, that suffering of another person has, and then we can, with compassion and creativity is equally important. With compassion and creativity, we can act. and we can get involved in our local communities or be creative in a demonstration against some government policy or against GMOs, because a lot of these demonstrations are pretty creative, actually, when you go to them. People express their creativity, but they're out there doing it, and there's something quite wonderful about that, too. But I think the media wants to block us off and shun us from the existential crisis and catastrophe that is really part of the American legacy today. They don't want us to feel that. They don't want us to hear that. Does that make any sense?
Yes, it does. It makes a great deal of sense. Now, for the remainder of the program, I'm going to shift gears, and I want to talk about what is having the most impact upon our lives. And everything that is climate-related is migration of species and pests that are devastating ecological systems, the loss of the oceans, extreme weather that is directly associated with anthropogenic climate change, warming threats to water resources and adding stress to agriculture and yields. The hottest day ever recorded in Europe happened just 5 days ago, 137 degrees. The worst sandstorm in American history in Arizona the last 7 days. You have Hawaii currently being hit by both a hurricane and lava flows. You have upheaval of the ground going clear up the state of California, where in many cases the ground has raised by as much as 18 inches because so much water has been sucked out of the lower strata of that soil that it's collapsing and causing either gullies or ridges to rise, making it dangerous. You have thousands of people who are food insecure and are going to become more insecure because food that traditionally could have been easily grown in our wonderful bread baskets are now adversely affected by heat and rain. The honeybee colony collapse. Over 50% of our food are being threatened. And the government continues to say that neonicotinoids are not responsible when the science shows they are. In essence, the United States no longer can claim clean water, clean food, a roof over your head as a right of life. And hence, we support a diseased diets. We support a corrupt and ineffective medical industrial complex, a completely mercenary and fatalistic banking system that profits off people's failure to pay their bills in a timely manner, which immediately increases the interest, like a payday loan. You would think that someone would stop and say, this is an issue, but no one's dealing with this issue. And unfortunately, most Americans are not dealing with it. Even when they're victimized by it, they're not dealing with it. And then you have the federal mismanagement and misappropriation of tax dollars that benefit private interests and not the greater public. The military-industrial contracts, intelligence surveillance contracts, agricultural subsidies primarily for chemical industrial farms, the meat industry, the private prisons, the insurance industries, the fossil fuel-related industries, nuclear industries, all benefit from the public largesse where we are subsidizing their losses and they are privatizing their profits. Hence, there is no equality in our commerce. We have ethnic inequality, racism. We have abrogated the responsibility to create good public schools and affordable housing and a new paradigm for debt relief and loans for housing and bankruptcy to stop perpetual enslavement to banks and debt collectors. We do not have affordable health care, which should be inclusive with preventative services that would include natural, non-toxic medical practitioners. And as a result, if you take into account the jobs that do exist are more often than not low-paying and not quality of life supportive. And holding private companies and their executives accountable for crimes. Every executive on Wall Street should be held accountable. They should be in the docks. Illegal drug selling practices, misleading science to push more pharmaceuticals. These people are committing acts against humanity. One drug alone, Vioxx, killed over 60,000 Americans. No one was held accountable. They sponsored the opiate epidemic. And they refused to nationalize the legalization of natural marijuana use. They support GMOs through Obama's DARK Act and closing off the revolving door between federal health agencies and private companies. They don't do. So in essence, we have an equanimity between victims who sue large corporations for personal injury or death and the government supporting the corporations like they did with the vaccines. So you can't sue a vaccine maker, even if it's shown that the vaccine was intentionally put on the market knowing it would not prevent a disease. So take us on a journey of addressing these issues that are important.
Excuse me. What's interesting, I think, is the parallel to this with the private companies receiving the largest of the of our tax dollars and the public support is that even our entire foreign policy today, through the State Department primarily, is certain ones responsible for our foreign relations, is really serves the interests of corporations today. It's not about nation building or about building ties of harmony and communication between peoples of different nations. I mean, we saw this with when Hillary was in, it's been going on well before Hillary, but when Hillary was in the State Department and her leveraging corporate interests in the foreign policy deals with many of these countries. You know, we'll give you the loan or some through the U.S. aid fund or something, but on the contingent that you allow Monsanto coming in and taking over this land for farming and moving it into or it could be a vaccine policy through the Garvey. Was it Garvey, the Bill Gates supported global vaccine effort. And that's, of course, in the interest of the big pharmaceutical companies. But the State Department has really just become a lobbying group. They are a lobbyist organization on the international sphere for these corporate interests. And to me, it's just rather despicable. And, of course, it's not so much about an American empire. An American overreach. This is just America serving as a tool for a corporate overreach, a corporate imperium of this oligarchic class of global elite. I mean that's my take home message from this because it would parallel just everything else that our government is doing today to support the interests of the private interests over the greater good and what we can pass and bills and legislation that can go through. They're going to serve to the benefit of the most people. And, that study out of Princeton and Northwestern University when they looked at 1,200 of the different policies from the Clinton administration on up, or I think from Daddy Bush on up, just showed that the vast majority, over 90% of policies that are being passed through the legislative branch are for the benefit of certain individuals, vested interest groups, or industries over the general greater public. So it just makes sense also that our foreign policy just reflects that very same thing. And unfortunately, I think, yes.
I wanted to get to something before we end the program, and that is you have some of the most conscientious, ethical, spiritual intellects in America, people such as Henry Giroux and Chris Hedges, and especially Chris Hedges, who was outside of this issue before anyone else. He had the courage to leave the New York Times, to follow an independent course, as did Seymour Hersh and others. But now he's attacked. Antifa's attacking him. And others are attacking him that actually would benefit if they listened to what he was saying. And instead, we are so immersed in this foolish, childish, immature behavior of identity politics that people feel that any action they do, you're aware of that, correct? You spoke with Chris on this.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Isn't that the irony of how low we have gone, especially those who contributed nothing that I'm aware of to society, being out there to try to spear the very people who are doing something important, stabbing him in the back, metaphorically.
But these, our bureaucrats are people that don't have mirrors in their home. They're probably petrified of mirrors because people like Hedges and Cornel West and Rabbi Lerner, they're the mirrors. Their voices are the mirrors that the bureaucrat doesn't want to, they don't want to see that image. They don't want to see hear those words. So you have to marginalize them. You're not going to debate them. You know, it's rare that anybody representing the elite class will ever be seen on the stage with any of these people for a real debate. You know, and Carlson Tucker, to his credit, he does bring Cornel West on, which is kind of humorous to watch those debates. But for the most part, you avoid them. You know, you don't want to hear those voices. It's the spiritual poverty that is pervasive in our country today. Andrew Harvey has said this on the program many times that we are spiritually impoverished as a nation today. I mean, you can find it in the grassroots where spirituality really occurs is, you know, the little group of women that will go to a hospital to bring flowers to, you know, to dying patients or people that are trying to do things at a very local level. But otherwise, our institutions are just bereft of anything sacred or holy. It's not there in any of these institutions, and particularly in the churches and the evangelical mega churches.
It seems as though whoever yells the loudest, condemns the most, is the most vulgar, believes that they are winning public opinion. And if you're the average American and you're seeing both people on the left and the right act out in such inhumane ways, insensitive ways, you're not going to support that. These people are such egotists, they don't realize how foolish they're looking.
Well, but we have a foolish population that's happy to to just go along with them, too, and support them. And that's the unfortunate thing. But as you said, it's the younger generation that's they're the ones that are being able to see behind the masks, and they really want nothing to do with it. Increasingly, and
I hope that Bernie Sanders.
Unfortunately, there's just no leadership coming up for me. The difficulty with the younger generation is going to be. Even their willingness, even the generation's own willingness to accept leaders within their generation. I think that's the real challenge. There was that Forbes article that was, want to read the enemy, read Forbes. But it was a very, very interesting story. It was a story about the execs and CEOs of the big Wall Street firms who were deeply concerned about all the MBAs coming out of Yale and Harvard and Wharton School. MIT Sloan School of Management, there's going to be this emptiness because they don't know how to lead. They're great at what they're doing. If they have to make money and do the deals and amount of effort and statistics and everything that they do, but to enter into some kind of a managerial role where they're going to have to take leadership, this is what the story was about, and they just don't see that they have those gifts. They're not getting those skills. And maybe that's because of the social media. When everything's on a horizontal platform and nobody's voice can really, you know, become louder than another's on social media, it's not like our generation where, you know, these young 20-somethings, you know, Stokely Carmichael and Bobby Seale or Jerry Rubin and Michael Lerner. They were young, but they had charisma. They stood up. They were educated. You may not agree with all their politics or their tactics, but they could walk their talk, and they motivated people. They were able to motivate people and give inspiration and guidance, and I don't really see that too much happening. Although maybe with the younger ones, like some of these kids from coming up from the high school from the park one. You know, I see this in my daughter too, in her generation. There seems to be a little more kind of vinegar there for wanting to be, come up and speak out and take on more of a leadership role.
But, well, we only have about a minute to go here, so I just want to close it out with this thought. I have to be an optimist because for 50 years of my career, half a century, when people sit across from me who have been told by their doctor there is no hope, prepare for the end, get your life in order, say your goodbyes, they've tried everything, and it's failed them. I have to give them hope. I have to try to extend the life with quality, or wherever possible, help them reverse that disease. But you can't do that if you're negatively inspired or filled with hubris and apathy. And I see a new growth, not of new ages, but rather of people who are grounded in a more authentic spiritual commitment to one another, happening now in direct proportion to the excesses of abuse against oneself, the animals, the planet, and other cultures. So we have more young people interested in veganism. We have more people of all ages wanting to get off the grid and go to a quieter, more peaceful, less stressful way of life. We have more people wanting to know about organic gardening and sustainable places to live. Now, they may not have all the skills, but they're curious and they want to learn. They want to grow. And I've had the good fortune to meet some of these people, actually employ some. And they are completely different from their counterparts that will spend a whole day watching porn or social media in the basement of their mother's house at the age of 26 while the mother is out working their butts off to buy them pizza and give them a free place to live and paying their student debt, where the person doesn't want to be discomforted by finding a job that is not in alignment with their sense of self. We have selfless people and extraordinarily selfish people. Mm-hmm. We have people looking for reason and meaning in life, and those who have abrogated that, they have no sense of who they are. But I see millions and millions of new people coming forward and saying, I can't change the system. I can't change. Nobody can change the paradigm. It's too absolutely corrupt by all parties, left and right, and their supporters, and their think tanks, and their foundations, and their media. So instead, let me just go about on a small scale finding a better way of living. And if you should happen to collapse in part or whole because you've not paid attention to what's important, your heart, your health, your brain, and the global warming, and the cost of medications, the quality of care, then maybe that's what it's necessary for you to get your moment of, maybe I should change. For other people, they're already changing, and they will set the light in the road for those who wake up one day. My hope is that everybody wakes up, but I don't believe it's going to happen before there's cataclysmic events. Society never collapses all at once. It begins to disintegrate piece by piece. It's fractionalized around the world. It's like a gigantic glacier calving off. Small calving at first, and accelerating till there's huge calving. That's what we're seeing now with society. And I believe you're absolutely right. Chris Hedges is right. And all the others are right. Andrew Harvey, who we just filmed, who is right. We have lost our sense of spiritual valuing as a society, though individuals are actually gaining and imploring that their communications, their commitment, their inner exchange be based upon spiritual exchange. Richard, thank you for being on.
Hey, thank you, Gary.
And for all of you listening, thank you very much. This has been a special edition of the Progressive Commentary Hour, trying to deal with all the different myriad issues that, for whatever reason, society, the government, the media have chosen to ignore. Have a nice day.
There's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying.